Welcome to It's Lit, where all things literary live at the root. I'm Danielle Belton, the Root's editor-in-chief, here with the managing editor of The Glow Up, Maisha Kai.
Hey.
Hey there, Maisha.
Hey.
Today we have a very talented, multi-hyphenate guest on the show. She's award-winning author, journalist, and podcaster, Kenria Rankin. Kenria is the author of 5 books, including How We Fight White Supremacy, A Field Guide to Black Resistance, and her most recent book, Anti-Racism, Powerful Voices, Inspiring Ideas. Her journalistic work has appeared in publications like Fast Company, Ebony, and Glamour, and she's also the founder and editorial director of the parenting blog, Black and Green Mama. She also co-hosts the Turn On podcast, a literary erotica podcast that explores the intricacies of having sex while Black, alongside sex educator Erica Easter.
She also has one of the best voices in podcasting, and I say that as, you know, someone who thinks she has a pretty good voice. No, but, you know, I love a little bit of erotica. I also love what Kenria has done with this book, which is actually the first in a series of books, and this is targeted actually towards the YA market, but I think this is one of those things that all of us can get into, all of us can, I think, use as like kind of a resource and inspiration. What she's done is really gather together these quotes from amazing thinkers and, you know, people well known and not so well known, really just reflecting on what it means to not just be conscious of race in America, but to be actively anti-racist. And that's something that I think we are constantly focusing on. Well, I'd like to think we are more and
yes,
more.
Yes, most definitely.
I don't want it to be like Frederick Douglass, who's becoming more and more important. Although I think Frederick Douglass is in this book. but no, I think, you know, as we talk about what comes next after addressing racism, it has to be really compelling people to be anti-racist. And she has such great insights on that. And she also has an essay that kicks the book off that's, I think, just worth everybody reading. But she has so much more to say, too.
Definitely, definitely. And I think our listeners are going to love Kenria as much as we did. So let's get into the interview.
Let's do it.
Kenria, welcome to It's Lit.
Hey, thanks for having me. Y'all are lit.
Oh my God, we are always lit. We're really excited to talk about books and literature and journalism with authors. That's our thing. And
all
we
the
are excited to have you with us today.
Yay. I'm really excited to be here with y'all. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, we're excited. So you're a fellow journalist as well as an author. Mm-hmm. And we are so ready to dig into your newest book. But since It's Lit is a podcast about Black books and writers, we like to start each episode by asking our guests to name at least one book, or if it's more than one, you can say two, but at least one book that you've considered life-changing, life-altering, the one that like inspired you like you had never been inspired before.
Yo, so like I listened to the show, so I knew y'all were going to ask me this. And it still didn't make it any easier.
Oh, no.
But thank you for listening. We do appreciate
it.
Yeah. Yes, thank you for listening.
Like, this is like trying to pick one of your kids. Like,
that's right.
I love books. They've been my friends since I was little. So I was like, okay, what do I do with this? And I decided that I would pick one from 2019, from like before the dumpster fire like kicked into high gear. So I think I'm going to go with Bossy Igby's I'm Telling the Truth, But I'm Lying.
Ooh, right. Bossy. We love Bossy. That's a good one.
Right?
That's a really good one.
Like,
yes.
I just love what it surfaces about mental health and memory and relationships, but like not just relationships with other people, but relationships with ourselves. It's like vulnerable and lyrical in a way that like the books that I connect with the most are. I just loved it. Yeah.
I think that's excellent.
Bossy is an incredible writer mm-hmm. and poet.
Just, oof.
No, okay. Good choice. Good choice. So, you've written 5 books to date.
Yeah.
But let's start with your most recent one, Words of Change, Anti-Racism, which has the distinct honor of being the first book in Spruce Books' Words of Change series.
Yeah.
Which is intended for young adult readers and older. So, how did this particular project come about?
It really fell into my lap. My publisher, Sharon, she read my last book, How We Fight White Supremacy, which came out in 2019. And she emailed me and was like, I have an idea. You know, she's like, I would love to do a book that celebrates anti-racist voices. And I was like, yeah, that sounds dope. And I liked her and thought she'd be fun to write, work with. And that just kind of what happened. And I was like, it's not a normal trajectory. And definitely none of my other books fell into my lap. Those were full of proposals and all the other stuff. But this, there was no proposal. There was a phone call and then a connection to my agent and then a book. It was crazy.
Oh, that's incredible. So this isn't your first book tailored to the young adult market, correct?
Yeah, my very first book. That's crazy because nobody really knows that. Look at you with homework. My first book is called Started Up, The Complete Teen Business Guide to Turning Your Passions into Pay. And it came out just before my daughter was born. So I was pregnant while I was like doing promo and all of that. And it's all about entrepreneurship and introducing young people to that concept. And it's pretty near and dear to my heart. It was fun. It's a good audience to write for.
You know, a lot of people sometimes, we've talked about this on the show before, tend to disregard like young adult, you know, literature as somehow being less than. So I would like to hear from you. Why are you intrigued about writing for this specific age group? Like, what do you enjoy about it?
Oh, yeah. I heard that episode with Jason when he was like, nah, son, like we the best.
exactly.
I just, you know, I think that young people can really understand big concepts in a way that we don't often give them credit for. Right. Like, Started Up is obviously a very different book from Anti-Racism, Powerful Voices, Inspiring Ideas, but they both start from the same place, which is that they can understand shit even that adults think is difficult. I think we just have to take the time to talk to them and give them context, and we also have to trust them with information. And I love the idea, especially as a mom, of writing books that catch people when they're still very much in formation. And help them to kind of form the way that they view the world. I mean, if you're doing it right and you're doing it in a way that is meant to shore up their very young skills so that, you know, they're armed when they become adults, it feels pretty damn cool.
You know, I love that answer. And I'm going to dig into it even a little further because, you know, the last time we spoke, and I love that you referenced this because you led me right into it. It was spring of last year. So spring of 2019, yeah. You know, and you'd just published How We Fight White Supremacy, which you co-wrote and co-published and co-curated with one of your colleagues at Color Lines, Akiba Solomon.
Akiba.
So shout out to Akiba. And that was an anthology of interviews and personal essays and more from not only the two of you, but like this bevy of incredible Black voices that were both known and lesser known, you know, including like Ta-Nehisi Coates and Tarana Burke, Elisa Garza, Mumia Abu-Jamal, Harry Belafonte, even our own Damon Young of VSB was in that book. And so many more people. And, you know, so obviously you have this proclivity for getting people to participate.
I don't know why they say yes, but I appreciate it.
Well, they did. And it's a marvelous book. You know, you all were gracious enough to send it to me. I love it. I return to it again and again. But, you know, that was something that involved obviously compiling thoughts from across leaders across the spectrum. And this one, even more so, except for you weren't actually recruiting people. You were kind of curating these quotes. So like, do you mind like just kind of cluing us into the processes of building these books? Like, was that similar this time around? Or if not, like what was challenging? Like what was distinctly challenging about this as opposed to the last one?
That's a great question. So with anti-racism, it really was about the mix for me. Mm-hmm. Like, I wanted to make sure that we weren't just highlighting the words of the folks who we hear about every February, right? You got your MLKs, you got your Malcolms. Like, we know all of those folks and we know a lot of what they've said. But I wanted to make sure that we are celebrating the work of people who are doing it right now. Yeah, you know, I wanted the young people and the old folks like me who read this book to really be able to understand that there are people doing this work all around us and situated in the present. This is not a fight that is over. This is not a fight that's new, like some people think it is. But there are people who've been doing the work of securing our liberation each and every day. And so that was one of the important things for me. Also, you know, there's a mix of younger folks and older folks, because I want people, young people, to see themselves and not think that this is only something they can do when they're grown. And then also, as a Black-ass person, it was important to me to center Black people. So we represent the bulk of the people who are quoted in the book. With How We Fight, first of all, everybody is Black, because that's what that book is. It, you know, Akiba and I like to say that it started in the middle of a Black-ass conversation. Like, that book was about centering us and the work and our advocacy and our lives. So the selection process there was more like, you know, we had these different themes that we wanted to explore. The book is all about the ways that Black people resist and fight and dismantle white supremacy. And so we started with, okay, you know, what are the groups of people? What are the ways that we do this? And so, like, there's a chapter on humor and the ways that we use that to fight. There's a chapter on love and loving ourselves whole in a world that tells us that we are not lovable. There's a chapter on organizing, right? And there's chapters on work and finance. And so after we got the categories down, then we did the work of figuring out who embodied those, who, you know, is a writer whose work really falls within that space. Who is an activist who's doing work around, you know, financial services and ways that we're fighting by the ways that we spend our money. And so that really led the process. And along the way, we got some really fabulous people to say yes.
You know, obviously, you know, in these two most recent works, you know, obviously they target different demographics. Let's just say that. I mean, I think that, you know, Words of Change, you could pick this up. And, you know, I say this as somebody in my 40s now. It's like, I dig this book.
Thanks.
I dig them both for different reasons. But, you know, they do dovetail in many ways, as you pointed out. And would you also say, and I think you kind of alluded to this, but I'd love to hear more, like, would you say that it dovetails with your life's work? And how would you describe that work at this point in your life?
Yeah, I think that it does. I think, like, so first I look at the ways that those two books are in relationship with each other. Like, I think that anti-racism is kind of both the book and the concept is a kind of a subset of How We Fight, right? So, you know, in anti-racism, I define white supremacy as a political, social, and economic system that thrives on the subjugation of people who've not been led into whiteness. And it really situates racism as just one of the isms and the obias that hold up this, like, stinking tent that makes up white supremacy. It's just one of those things. And so How We Fight White Supremacy is a larger conversation. And I think my book really, or my work really attaches to that, because it's really about centering the lived experience, work, and advocacy of Black people. Like, that's what I do all day. So that looks like writing books like these. It looks like I run an editorial consultancy. So I help nonprofits, like, better reach and better serve the people who they are supposed to be doing the work for. I co-host a Black literary erotica podcast called The Turn On. And that's all about, like, speaking to the fact that joy and pleasure are also important modes of resistance. You know, we live in this world that wants us to be joyless and sexless. And so all of those things come together to advance this narrative about, you know, the different ways that we are as Black people and how Blackness shows up, and the fact that we are not solely defined by the things that people dislike about us and the things that they attempt to do to us, that we are defined by who we are and what we do and who we love and how we love and all of those things.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
So I was thinking, though, like, with so many amazing people, like, you have such an incredible roster of voices with Words of Change. You know, you've had Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and you had Ibram, and just so many, you reference and quote Ida B. Wells. Like, I sit there and just kind of, like, wonder, like, you know, how do you even pick? Like, there's so many amazing people.
Very difficult.
to pull from. How do you pick and prioritize?
Yeah. Man, so I'm a person who loves spreadsheets. So, like, I started by, like, just creating a spreadsheet and just listing out all the people whose voices I wanted to hear. It was way more, I think my charge was maybe 120 people to come up with or something like that. And I just made this long-ass spreadsheet of people. And then I started to look for the quotes. So some of them were things that just came that I just knew, right? Like, some of the more common things. Some of them, it was actually more difficult than I thought it would be, because while they have lots of wonderful quotes and have done a lot of work, they had to specifically be situated around the theme of anti-racism, which isn't the easiest thing to talk about. And so trying to find little bite-sized quotes was more challenging than I thought it was going to be. So some of it was just like, okay, I read 200 quotes by this person and I found the one that feels perfect in this mix. And then there were just different parts of that I wanted to lift up, and different parts of the audience that I wanted to talk to, right? Like, there's a quote that might, you know, resonate with a white child living in, you know, Cleveland that wouldn't resonate with my Black child living here just outside of D.C. And I wanted to make sure that everybody saw themselves. So it just took a lot of work.
I mean, and the work is evident, you know, and then there's also, I mean, obviously this is all other, you know, the book itself is compiled of other people's voices, but you introduced this book with a really beautiful, brief but beautiful essay about privilege. And I love this part where you say, this fight requires more from us than simply saying, I love all people, or working hard not to personally engage in racist acts. It requires us, you, to actively engage, to use our privilege, to advocate for all, to be staunchly anti-racist. And, you know, I think, like, if I'm honest, I think, you know, Black people, we know what that means sometimes.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think it is an important distinction to make, especially for younger readers. So how would you define, you know, oh, I'm not racist versus being staunchly anti-racist?
Yeah. It's interesting because I think anti-racism is, it's a term that's specific and it's important, but it's not big enough, right? And, like, that comes back to that whole thing about the isms and the obias, like racism and ableism and homophobia and classism and transphobia and xenophobia, and how all of those contribute to, you know, what white supremacy is. It was important to me to really situate this within a conversation about privilege, because I think it can be really hard to see your privilege, right? And I'm not just talking about, like, white folks who have been walking around with their heads in the clouds and never had to really consider it. I think that when shit's fucked up, it can be hard to see that it's more fucked up for other people. And I think part of doing this work is not necessarily, like, not just being able to identify your privilege, but to be able to figure out how you can use it to help others, right? So, as a cishet Black woman, I know that I have privilege, that I enjoy privilege that my trans sisters don't have, period. So it's important to me to use my resources and my work in order to lift them up. And I think that we all need to come to this, or at least my approach to this work is to understand where I am situated within that hierarchy about what oppressors are on my shoulders versus other people's shoulders, and figure out how I can lift some of that burden off of them. And I wanted folks to come to this work with that understanding of where they're situated and how they can use that to the advantage of other people.
So though this book's overriding theme is anti-racism, I really like that you're talking about this broader discussion of privilege. So why was it important for you to kind of, like, frame this discussion and talk about racism within that broader context around privilege?
Right, because we have privilege too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even so the fact much. That we're just sitting here having this conversation.
Exactly.
Really and truly, I'm sitting here with my little light and my little computer and my little microphone, and that is not something that everybody has, a platform to be able to talk about stuff. I think in this particular book, that was important to me because, as you said, the audience is different than in my previous work. I typically write books, and the book that I'm working on now, like, it's for Black folks, it's from Black folks. And the audience for this book is broader. And I think that I would be doing the readers a disservice. I'd be doing Black folks a disservice. I'd be doing myself a disservice if I didn't take the time to help people situate themselves in that and understand that, you know, like I said, while anti-racism is an important concept, it's not the only one. And that we can't really fight white supremacy on only one front, right? Like, I have a lot of analogies for white supremacy, but one of them is like an octopus with a whole bunch of arms, yo. Like, you can't just cut one of them jumps off because another one is going to knock you in the back of the head. Like, we got to get them all at the same time.
And I think they grow back.
They do.
It's very much like a hydra.
Exactly.
It's really,
yes. So we got to fight on all the fronts at all the times. And I think that that can sometimes sound overwhelming or feel overwhelming to folks, but that's one of the things I love most about how we fight is that it really pushes this idea that this is a collective thing. Like, every one step that you take, even if it doesn't feel like it, even if it felt like a baby step, even if it was just that you got out of bed this morning, because, you know, sometimes for Black folks, fighting back is getting up, right? That each one of those baby steps that we take pushes us closer to liberation collectively. And there's nothing that feels more reassuring to me or more reassuring to me than to know that we're doing it together.
You know, I looked back at the article we wrote about, you know, this is how we fight. And that was the key word that you used then. You talked about the we being so important. And I love that you just talked about this kind of multi-tentacled thing, because I see you taking this kind of multi-prong counterattack, right? I can't even call it a counterattack because it's so loving and it's so embracing. You know, so I have to double back to your podcast, actually. The Turn On, we must say that, you know, podcast to podcast, The Turn On, which you co-host with sex educator Erica Easter, and has already been named one of the best sex, erotica, dating, and relationship podcasts by Mashable.
Yeah, that's crazy.
You talked about this a little bit, but I'd love to talk about it a little bit further. You know, for Black people in particular, you know, as we know, our bodily autonomy, our joy, so many things have been policed and regulated and absolutely restricted and co-opted, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, in so many environments. How do you feel that cultivating our sensual selves is vital to that broader quest for liberation?
So, you know, I do like to always kind of, I feel like I'm like the person in the movie where they're trying to figure out the crime, and I'm like doing the red yarn and connecting all the dots all the time. the dots I want to connect here are, you know, in How We Fight White Supremacy, we have that chapter on love. And we talk a lot about the fact that this system is set up to teach us that we are not lovable, that we shouldn't love ourselves. Who are we to love ourselves when whiteness doesn't love us, when there's nothing that we can ever do that will let us into that system? We are not the chosen few who've been let into that, and we won't be. And I don't want to be, but that's another issue. But who are we, right? To find joy in who we are and to connect with that and to love ourselves. And, oh, God, who are we to love other people?
Mm-hmm. And to reframe our sexuality for ourselves even, right?
Yeah, to not, you know, allow ourselves to be reduced to parts, right, that are used to create more workers, to not, you know, only see ourselves in women who are trotted out, you know, in a circus as being some abnormality because of the shape of our bodies. And so with the show, for me, it's really about taking the time to reframe that. to not be influenced by what the world wants to tell us about ourselves and our ability to love and who we are, you know, both in the sheets and out of the sheets, that the joy and the pleasure that comes from loving ourselves and from loving other people is valid, and not just valid, it feels good, and not just that it feels good, but that it's a part of us getting free. And so that's what we do every week. We try to get free.
Yes, that is amazing. And I completely agree with everything you said. Yay. I've often argued that Black love is a revolutionary act mm-hmm. in and of itself. Mm-hmm. Every day that you choose to love someone else or to love yourself as a Black person in this country is basically going against the programming that we've been conditioned,
that's right.
that they've tried to condition us to have, the self-hate. Mm-hmm. It's going against our original purpose while we were brought to this country, which was basically to serve others and not serve ourselves. Mm-hmm. So I like
that so much. That's serving ourselves. That's sexy. That's sexy. Yeah. I like it.
But to get back to the writing for a moment, as much as I love talking about the Black love,
I mean,
but since our focus is on Black writers, it feels like we're asking a variation of this question of almost every writer we've interviewed who published in 2020. But given the events of the year, it's somewhat inevitable. So Words of Change was published in late July, while we were still seeing protests for racial justice around the country and ramping up to a still contentious election. Another phenomenon we saw during that time was a clamoring for books on racial justice and anti-racism, which you and your publishers could not have anticipated. With those reinvigorated conversations in mind, and as we approach a new year, is there a particular way you hope readers engage with and use your book?
Yeah. It's been a hell of a year. So this book was originally supposed to come out in December. And so the publishers moved it up to July in order to help meet the need. And that's always, it's tough doing this kind of work, right? And writing these kind of books. Like I would love nothing more than to wake up and have like this word not be in our vocabulary, have it be no need to teach our kids about racism and how to be anti-racist and to teach our kids about how to handle, you know, it both at the personal and the structural level. And so, like, this has been bittersweet for me to have a book and then have it be needed. I mm-hmm. really would rather that it had just been a resource that folks could have or something pretty that you can put on your coffee table and use it when you needed it, as opposed to it being the thing right now. But I think your question is a good one. And I think that the first thing folks need to know is that, sure, reading is great, right? It's lit. That's why we're here.
Yes.
It's what we love to do. But it's not enough.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it's been dope to see folks going out and buying these books or going online and buying these books and hopefully supporting Black bookstores.
And hopefully reading them.
Well, and that's the thing, right? So then it's like, all right, you bought it. Did you read it?
Right. Did you take some notes in the margins?
Did you flip open some pages? Did you share some shit? But then I'm like, also, what are you doing? Right? So like, by the time you finished it, had you figured out what you were going to do to fight? Like, then you have to sit with that question. What am I doing? How am I being actively anti-racist? How am I working to dismantle the system of white supremacy rather than just buying this book and maybe cracking it open? And so that can look a lot of ways, right? Like, it could look like using the words. There's a quote from this writer and a witch who I adore, named Halen Belay, who's in the book. And she wrote, I pulled a quote actually from an essay that she wrote for How We Fight. And it says, they tell me Black bodies are worthless. I tell them that this Black body is sacred. So like, maybe that looks like somebody using that as a jumping off point for them to go work with an organization that serves Black LGBTQIA teens, right? Helping them to feel good in their bodies and to shore up and to be safe and to love on themselves. Or it could mean that people are taking inspiration from all these organizers and activists who we're learning about this year around prison industrial complex abolition Maybe you decided that that's the fight that you want to fight. Well, what you doing about it? Not just tweeting about it, but what are you doing about it? Are you sending your money to Black-led organizations who've been doing this work for literal decades to help advance that movement? So what are you doing is what I ask. And I can't tell folks what to do. I can't tell them how to get there. But my hope is that when they read my books and when they read the books of so many of the other wonderful folks that y'all have been able to have on the show, that they're able to figure out what their mode of resistance is, what they're going to do to help us to dismantle the system that seeks to kill us. You got to do something.
And speaking of doing something, I have a question, a final question for you. What's next? What are you doing next? What's the next book? What are you working on? What's coming up?
Girl, you're all up in your business. Look at us.
So I'm steadily recording the podcast, and I'm also writing a new book. It's right now it's called Complex Saviors, and it examines the ways that racism attempts to kill Black women and the ways that we save ourselves.
I'm like, could you inject it in my veins?
I know.
Now
that sounds quite profound.
I know. I was like, I need a t-shirt, I need a podcast, I need an elixir.
I feel like I've been saving myself from racism for a long, long, long
time. Listen, and unfortunately, it might be a long time yet.
Exactly.
And that's the thing. It is a book that is both exhilarating to write because I keep getting the opportunity to be in conversation with amazing Black women, doulas, doctors, nurse practitioners, women who have literally advocated to save their lives and the lives of their children. I get to have these amazing conversations, but I often spend a lot of my time in those conversations crying. Mm-hmm. And you know how hard that is as a journalist? Like, I'm muting myself, right? I don't want to impact the person who I'm talking to, but it's the things that we have to go through in order to keep ourselves alive in a system that wishes us dead. The contortions are amazing. And we shouldn't have to do that. But it's important to me to not only, you know, look at the way that racism got us fucked up, but also look at the ways that we're fighting back and we're not depending on other people to do it for us. And none of that is new. It's what we've always done. And I am so glad that I have the opportunity to bring all those voices together into one place.
Well, we're so...
We can't wait to read that.
Yeah, I mean, and we're so glad to have your voice here with us today. That just... Mwah. And what a good podcast voice you have.
Thank you.
I was like,
So this was just an amazing discussion. Thank you so much, Kenria, for joining us today. We loved every minute of it.
Absolutely.
We're
going
to love not just you. We love you.
Yes.
And
I love
y'all. Our podcast. I love you, Maisha.
I love you.
We're going to love on ourselves.
Yes, that's right.
As we've been ordered
all
to do.
Day, every day, each and every one. This was awesome. Thank y'all so much. I had a ball.
The Root Presents It's Lit is produced by myself, Maisha Kai, and Michaela Heck. Our sound engineer is Ryan Allen.
If you like the show and want to help us out, please give us a rating on Apple Podcasts. It really helps other people find the show. And if you have any thoughts or feedback, you can find me on Twitter at Black Snob or on Instagram at Belton Danielle.
And you can find me at Maisha on Twitter, that's M-A-I-Y-S-H-A, and at Maisha Kai on Instagram.
And before we go, we always like to talk a little bit about what we're currently reading. Maisha, what are you getting into these days?
Well, I'm getting into something I think a lot of people are getting into these days, which is The Prophets by Robert Jones Jr. This is a very buzzed about book. And I'm just cracking into it. You know, it's interesting because we hear this sometimes from people who are like, you know, I don't want to hear any more slave stories. I don't want to, you know, revisit this really pivotal, important chapter in African-American history. I'm just going to leave that right there. But yeah, this takes a different approach to that. I haven't gotten as far as I'd like to, so I don't want to give it. And I also don't want to give any spoilers. It just came out. But I think this is going to be a book a lot of people are talking about as it kind of explores the intersection between race and the history of enslaved people and religion in America and how those things intertwined and continue, I think, to intertwine with us as Black people in America. What are you reading, Danielle?
You know, other than The Root, like lately, I haven't had that much time to dive into a good book. I feel so bad.
What's been going on? Insurrection? You have?
I know. Apparently, the world is ending. I did find time to get into the fourth season of The Crown.
Oh yeah,
which was quite good.
Yes.
So I highly recommend it.
I also highly recommend. There's good stuff. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if one should watch I don't know. I think that's a good place to look right now. That's a, you know, let's just totally escape.
Let's look
America.
To the past.
The look to the past.
Is not
let's
good
look,
right
look
now.
Away. Look away.
Let's just look away. Look away. And that is it for us this week. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Until then, keep it lit.